Welcome to Courage Cocktail. I am your host, Leanne McClymont. I'm thrilled you are joining us today. Welcome. We, if you're anything like the McClymonts, are planning summer vacations. Our kids are home, everyone's going in opposite directions, and it's time now to think about those wonderful places where we go on vacation. And that's what inspired today's show. I decided the most important part of vacation can be, beyond being with your family, those great pictures we take. And it dawned on me how poorly I do this job. So I went around, I looked around, and lo and behold, I found a professor. I found a young professor at UNC who knows a whole lot more about digital photography than me. And so I asked her to come on today and join us to speak about how can we learn to take better photographs, digital pictures. Welcome to the show, Allie Halperin.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's great you're here. Now listen, I would love you to explain to our listeners, tell them what makes you a pro. What is it that you do? Where did you come from and what's your background?
Well, I grew up in Chapel Hill, so I'm a native and glad to be back. I went to school in New York City at Barnard College, and there I actually studied American Studies and the Civil War Reconstruction Era, which was a departure from my current art and photo studies. But I was looking at Civil War veterans' photographs and studying that era and seeing how these veterans returned to the South and had changed bodies and how the Army photographed them. And that actually led me to my current work in photography and art. I went to Maryland Institute College of Art to further explore what it meant to be an artist. And then I came back to Chapel Hill to get my master's in fine art at UNC. And here I've been working in photography and sculpture to explore this changed body and how it's represented in society and culture and visually.
Now, when you made that movement, that's a remarkable story. When you made the movement from the University of Maryland or the Maryland
Institute
yeah. to UNC, Chapel Hill, You made a big step forward mm-hmm. because I think you were saying, I need to learn more about art.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes, I went to Maryland to really explore what it meant to be in a studio and create. And there I made a lot of sculptures and installations, kind of taking over spaces and really working with my hands to make big gestures. And when I came to UNC, I started turning back on myself and looking at what it meant to represent images and represent spaces in the body, and looking at how photography did that historically and in the contemporary sphere.
So now that we know this, I'm going to ask you to jump in with me.
Sure.
Let's jump into the pool. Let's go right into the deep end.
Okay.
And then we're going to wrap the conversation more into how your photography and sculpture work.
Okay.
But right now, I have listeners who are out there on the edge of their chairs saying to me, when is she going to get to the point?
Okay. So, I want to talk to listeners about how to take a better photograph. I think so often you put your subject in the center of your frame and use that auto setting and that auto focus to take your picture. And I want to encourage them to really explore what your camera can do. Take it off the auto setting, and I'll talk a little bit about how you can really control your camera to get a better picture. I have my students on the first day of class watch Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. And that movie is so much about murder and mystery, but it's also about photography and framing. The whole movie is shot through this one window, which acts as the frame. And your camera has that same frame. And that's what you have to think about every time you look into your lens, about this frame that's going to exist around your subject matter, and to really think about how can I create the most exciting composition, create some energy in that frame. So rather than placing your subject in the center of an image, think about the rule of thirds. That's where you divide your frame with two horizontal lines and two vertical lines. So you have these nine squares, and that breaks up your frame. So you want to put your subject matter in where those points intersect. So you have these four these points inside of your frame.
So it's like a tic-tac-toe
right,
thing.
Exactly.
I'm looking at a tic-tac-toe screen. Okay.
So instead of putting your subject in the very center, try putting them off to the right so you can activate that composition. Those points of intersection on that frame are going to create some more energy and tension. So think about the edges of your camera and of your viewfinder. Instead of letting their feet get cut off at the bottom, give the viewer some space to stand on when they look inside the picture. Instead of having a tree limb get cut off at the edge, what if it curved around and re-entered the frame so you keep your eye moving around?
So what you're asking our listeners to do, I swear, last week we had the same presentation, which was on a bonsai, mm-hmm. and the gentleman, the master of last week's talk was this. You have to create a composition that invites questioning.
Right, exactly.
What is it you see here, and can we play with this?
Yeah.
So when you think about digital photography, it's the same as any other photography, right? I mean, it's just using a camera to capture something.
Right.
So we've got this tic-tac-toe thing. We're going to frame it to the right. So you use
or the left.
Or the left.
Yeah.
Thank you. Lefties out there. But you used a fancy word, activate.
Right.
What's that mean?
So instead of having something plumb dropped in the middle, you want to create movement. You want to have your eye bounce around the frame and stay in the composition rather than entering at one point and then leaving immediately in another point.
Ah.
So to activate it means that there are multiple elements and moments that the eye can get drawn to, and therefore it stays in the picture rather than just exiting out through one vantage point.
So in addition to these composition, this tic-tac-toe, I'm sorry to do this to you.
No.
I'm dumbing it down.
No, not at all.
I need as much help as I can get in this department. I'm serious. Present you with a serious deficit. But I'd like to know, how else do we shift energy? Do we use light? Do we use other things?
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about, here we are in the summer, and it's got this bright summer sun, and you would think, oh, let me go out and take a picture. It's so sunny out. And really, that's not the best time to get your best picture, especially for a portrait. You don't want to go out in the middle of the day and have these strong lights creating harsh lines on the face, harsh shadows. If you're a little bit older, you don't want to see every single wrinkle in the face or have your frizzies in your hair be highlighted by a backlit subject. Your best time to get a portrait is in the golden hour, which is right before the sun comes up in the morning or right after it goes down at night. That's when you're going to have this soft, diffused light happening. So after the sunset, you still have this ambient light coming through. And if that's not a good time for you, try shooting on an overcast day where you have the sunlight diffused by clouds, so you don't have those strong lights casting strong shadows on the face.
Well, what happens to those among us who are going to go to lakeside or go to the ocean for
right.
July vacation? And not only do you have bright sun, you have sand, you have water.
Right.
And yet you really want to take your pictures. Is there ways to mitigate these things if you have to shoot in those conditions?
Yes, I would encourage you to find a shade or create a shade. So say there's a tree in the middle of the field. Go into the shade of the tree. And I want to stress being creative in this instance. So you have your subject in the shade. You don't want them dark. But say you have a piece of white paper. You can use that piece of white paper to act as a reflector. You set your subject in the shade, put a piece of paper in the sunlight, and have that paper reflect sun onto their face. So you don't have them squinting into the sunlight, and you don't have these frizzies highlighted by the sun. Instead, you have this nice shadow, but also their subject, their face, is lit up by this reflector, this makeshift reflector that you've just created.
So it's interesting that you're saying we can do these things. No one would know that there was a piece of white paper in the frame, but they're inexpensive.
Right.
They're kind of clever,
right?
But they're also invisible.
Right. So put the piece of paper or a towel or a white t-shirt somewhere where you can't see it. So you crop that out when you set up your frame, your composition, like I talked about earlier, and that light is still being pushed into the frame by this reflection, but you don't know about it. It just looks like a really elegant portrait.
When I was in radio, writing for radio broadcasting school, I learned something that we used volume of our voices to draw attention or to put attention onto something or take it away. I think that's what you're doing with light. It's an equivalent metaphor. You use light in sensible ways to frame things to help draw attention to the right stuff, but take it away from not so cool stuff.
Exactly. That's what photography is all about. If you look at the Greek translation of photography, it's about drawing with light. So really, your photograph is a representation of how light is bounced around an image and then recorded on your light sensor or your film.
When you think about what it is you're doing, what gets your juices flowing about taking and teaching photography? I know you taught it at the university. You taught digital photography 101. I guess it was called 105. What was it that got your juices like, I love this job?
Well, I think so many students come into my classroom and want to learn how to take a good photograph and how to learn the technical skills necessary. And that's definitely something I talk about, and the different parts of your camera and how to utilize your setting to make a good representation of something. But I like to question what good means. How can you rethink about what visuals do for the viewer? How something that's aggressive or off-putting can actually be just as effective as something that's pretty or beautiful. And really what artists do is rethinking about how visuals change our world and how visuals speak to politics and economics and race and religion, and how a photograph and the composition, the lighting, the dimensionality in a photograph can speak to broader issues.
So that leads me back to where we began. You explained to me, you said that you studied these photographs from the Civil War, or that they found you, you started looking at them. And then you said to me, their bodies changed, the shape of their bodies changed.
Right.
So can you tell us then how that brought you as an artist into going from two-dimensionality to three-dimensionality?
Right. I was looking at these photographs of Civil War veterans who returned from war as amputees. So here you have this visual of how something political, economic, and racial literally changed the bodies and the visuals of a population. And when I came to UNC, I started exploring something similar in my mind, but not necessarily in others. I was looking at hoarders and taking screen grabs of hoarders from the TV show and photographing them. And there's another instance.
Now, hoarders, you're going to have to tell everyone what this means. We can't assume everyone knows what a hoarder is.
Okay, a hoarder is someone who attributes more value to an object than its intrinsic value. So you have a plastic bottle that your average person would throw away or recycle. A hoarder thinks that that bottle means a lot more and therefore retains it and fills their home to the brim with objects that one person might throw away, but they accumulate and have this entire home filled with trash or their treasured objects to the point where you can't move around your house and you can't function.
I see. And so you saw this on TV?
Yes. I began photographing them. And there you can see how the body is changed by these objects.
How is the body changed by the objects?
You can't move around your space. You are forced to move in throughout your life in different patterns. And the way you function, the way you eat in your kitchen changes based on this excess around you.
I see. Okay, so it's a complete it influences the shape of where they live and how they can perform, and that becomes something that changes the way they look.
Right. So from those photographs where the body is manipulated and shifted, you can see how I would then move to something more physical, where mm-hmm. I began taking my own objects and thrift store objects, these objects of excess, and manipulating them myself to make three-dimensional sculptures that still spoke to hoarding in excess, but became more visceral.
So they always tell you in radio that it's hard to talk about ideas without concrete stuff.
Right.
So when you say you bought stuff at a Five and Dime or at the thrift store, what did you buy?
I bought clothing.
Uh-huh.
People bring so many items to the thrift store, extra t-shirts from college, these pajamas that they never wear. And I got those from the thrift store and from my own excess, and I began tarring them.
What's that mean?
I put tar, as in roofing tar or asphalt tar, onto them, so they became these hardened, black, shiny objects. So an old wife beater that no one wants to wear anymore became this slick, black, shiny, concrete, plasticized piece of art that you could then hang on the wall. An object that you once thought was trash or something to get rid of was reincorporated into something commodifiable and perhaps beautiful.
Oh, I'm sure it's beautiful. That's what I put on our Facebook poster.
Right.
Our Facebook and your website. The first image is the striking, a wife beater, by the way, is a t-shirt. It's a strapless tank top kind of a t-shirt. And kids wear them all the time. I don't know how it got that lecture, how it got that label. I'm not even going to guess. But this, you actually dipped it in tar or somehow, and now it forms the solid three-dimensional object
right.
that is beautiful.
Yeah. It's entombed in a way, and it's
yes.
frozen in time now. So that moment of history and that moment of once trash and excess is now encapsulated by tar, which is a whole other bag of references in itself.
You can say that for sure. We are in North Carolina. We are in Chapel Hill. So when you talk about tar, and I have to pronounce the R here,
yeah.
Tar Heels, this is quite a natural fit. But we have so many listeners in multiple states and other places in the world, actually. And when I talk about Tar Heel State, you know, no one's really told me where Tar Heel comes from. Do you have any idea?
There's a few different references. One is the walking across the soldiers walking across the Tar Heel State and getting tar on their heels while they were walking. So they were stuck in place and their tracks were formed. That's one story I've heard. I think there are a few different iterations. Tar can, there's different kinds of tar. Like some people think it actually refers to sap from trees. And then different mining techniques, but
I know it's such a powerful word, and this, it's all part of our identity, isn't it? As
right.
as North Carolinians. Well, now listen, time is of the essence. You've helped us build a deeper understanding of photography, but I want to talk a little bit more about your artwork, and I want to know where are you? What's your website? What's going on in your studio, and what's on the agenda for Allie Halperin? Where are we going with you?
Well, I'd love for people to visit my website, which is www.alliehalperin.com. And there you can see a wide variety of artwork, from my tar sculptures to my photographs that I've talked about. And you can see the different work that I'm doing and hopefully will continue to update and work on. And I have a studio in Chapel Hill, and as I move forward in my life, I'm moving to New York, and I would love for people to get my art before I move, as I don't want to take it with me, and I'd love for the tar pieces to stay in the Tar Heel State. So I'd encourage you to visit my website. You can find my contact information there.
Okay, so let's get this right. It's www.alliehalperin.com. and keep the Tar Heel art in the Tar Heel state. I love that. And listen, listeners, our young artists are a joy to have on the radio show. Not many of us have the courage to interview them, but this young lady was particularly invested in our community, and your website really does talk to us, speaks to us as North Carolinians. I didn't realize you were a natural or a born here in Chapel Hill.
Right.
I had no idea before we started this conversation.
Yeah.
So you're going to take the big step up to the New York City?
Yep. I'd love to be a part of the New York art scene and represent North Carolina artists up there and really have a voice.
Well, we have to help you then. All righty. So you come. Let's go out to your website. Let's look at your artwork. You know what? We may post some notes about what you taught us today, and that could come in very helpful. I may need you to look, eyeball them before I send them out to our listeners.
Sure.
But I'll make it a point to post some few tips out there, or at least a link to some tips for helping us all take digital, great digital photography. And I want to thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So listeners, stay tuned. We're coming on. We're celebration of summer. We're coming into ice cream season. And many of you will be very angry with me. What's coming up next is premium ice cream from the Tar Heel State called Tar Heel Creamery. Stay tuned.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please check out our website, wcomfm.org. That's www.wcomfm.org. And you know, once again, the Art Center in Carrboro is hosting summer programs. So let you know what's going on here this week, June 22nd, Make Your Own Toad House. And the instructor for that will be Becky Johnson. The ins and outs of indie publishing on June 22nd and 23rd with Jen McConnell, and the power of food for diabetes prevention and treatment. Dilip Bartman will be teaching that. That's coming up at the Art Center in Carrboro this summer.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show over here at WCOM LPFM in Carrboro, North Carolina. This is Leanne McClymont. So happy you could join us this afternoon for your cocktail. You know, our studios moved in August, and we're in this delightful, more public, easy to access, and a visitor, a very special visitor, just happened to be strolling in. Her name is Allegra Jordan. Allegra and I became friends with some work-related stuff, but Allegra wrote this remarkable book called Harvard 1914, which I read, and I've read it twice. It was beautiful. The thing about Allegra's work is from that book, she has begun a website all about reconciliation poetry. Allegra, I want to welcome you to the show, Courage Cocktail. You've got to, I'm going to give you some time. Teach us about your website. Talk about this.
Oh, thanks so much. What a pleasure to be here and to see you in your natural habitat, a radio studio.
Thank you.
The idea about reconciliation poetry has been a fairly new one I've learned. A lot of people know what love poetry is. It's how to express this delightful sense of connection. And people know what, death poetry is. It's mourning, something that you've lost. But reconciliation poetry is about interruptions. It's about a cycle going on, whether or not it's a cycle of violence, a cycle of sadness, that we have just accepted that's just how it has to be. And the poetry of reconciliation is the poetry of interruption. How do we interrupt the cycle? And one of the most classic poems in this area is by Sophocles. And it's translated by the Nobel Prize laureate Seamus Heaney. It's called a fragment is in The Cure of Troy. And I'll summarize it. I don't have it right in front of me, just strolling by. But it discusses reconciliation poetry has three parts. And the first is a discussion about how things are. And this particular poem says, human beings hurt each other. They torture one another. They get hurt and they get hard. And that's the first bit of that poetry from 460 BC. And it's very much with us today. Human beings still torture each other. They get hurt and they get hard. And then usually the poetry has some kind of bad advice that we hear, which in this case it says, people say, don't hope on this side of the grave. They just say, accept what is the way things have to be. And that's not very good advice because we know from looking around us that, yes, there are very bad things going on, but there's equally things that are great going on, and both are actually true. And so we know that there are murders and hurtful things going on all over the world, and that they will happen tomorrow, and that we would be quite foolish if we did not believe that this will happen again. Only an idiot would not believe that horrible things will happen tomorrow. But it's equally true that there's the marvelous in life, and the marvelous is about the very real things that create human connection that are as healing as you can get. You cannot buy these things. These are things that truly heal your soul. And so to finish the poem, there's usually some call to hope, which is in Sophocles' language. So hope for a sea change on the far side of revenge. Believe a farther shore is reachable from here. Believe in miracles and cures and healing wells. Believe is what he asks us to do. Believe that, yes, the murderous is there, but also the marvelous is there. So those are the three parts of reconciliation poetry, that things are very difficult, and that's very true. We get bad advice, but we can root ourselves in hope, and that is a very hopeful place to be. So I put up an essay about this type of poetry on the website, and on my website originally it was a website for my book, and I just want to explain some of the poetry in the book was this type of poetry, and I wanted people to know this is designed to interrupt your thinking about this is the way things have to be. And people from all over the world, I learned, are Googling the terms reconciliation poetry, and they're coming to the site because they're struggling for language about finding hope. And they're coming from places like Russia, Oman, Lebanon, Israel, India, Serbia, South Africa, of course, the United States and Canada. all over South America, 54 countries. And it's not a lot of people, but a few people every day around the world Google reconciliation poetry, and through my Google Analytics on my website, they come to this place. They're longing for language to help them explain, what am I feeling? I sense that things, the way things are, may not be the way things have to be. How do I get there?
Listeners, have you just received a dose of courage cocktail? Allegra, you walk by the door, I swing in, you come in, and you deliver the goods. This is quite remarkable on many fronts. Sophocles wrote in our classical times, Greek, and surprisingly, his quest never ended, and he is absorbed in our fibers. And I wonder, I can't help but wonder, what is this website you're telling me all these people are visiting?
The site reconciliationpoetry.com.
So it's www.reconciliationpoetry.com. Okay.
Yes.
And then you will find more information about reconciliation.
Yes, there are essays that describe what the reconciliation process is. Why bother to reconcile? It's very difficult. When people want to reconcile, there are often people who are saying, just leave well enough alone. Things are bad. They'll never get better. And you're bucking the trend when you try to choose it. So often reconciliation is not very popular. The site has original poems that I've written from a number of different experiences in life. And it also has the famous poems, such as the one by Sophocles. A very famous poem in this genre is by Bob Dylan. Some say his best work is Every Grain of Sand, a song that when he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Bruce Springsteen said that Every Grain of Sand was his best work. And that I worked with a team of women up in Massachusetts. We were actually at a Bible study, and they did not think much of Bob Dylan, but I asked them whether or not they could help me think through this amazing piece. And perhaps on a future show, we'll talk about what the piece says. But it's a great call to reconciliation by Bob Dylan.
And of all voices, one would not suspect that.
It's one of the most fascinating pieces. So if you go to the website, there will be resources for people who are struggling with the idea that the world may not be the way it has to be. And how do I think about that?
I want every listener out there to come out to that website. After you visit Allie's, I want you to come out to www.reconciliationpoetry.com. I want you to think about this word in a different way. When I think of reconciliation, I think of a sacrament. That's just part of my background. But I have a feeling that those among us who might need some healing, both on our physical level and on other levels, this might be a great, great way to spend the afternoon. Poke around. Allegra promises me she will return to our show. You stay tuned. Allegra, you are always welcome here. We'll nail the date down. I'll ask Emma, my summer assistant, to book you today. And listeners, you just be prepared. This is going to, something good is going to come out of that kitchen. Thank you so much, Allegra.
Thank you.
welcome back to Courage Cocktail. I'm thrilled that we had an extra guest on hand with Allegra Jordan. Listeners, I recommend that you do check out her website, www.reconciliationpoetry.com. If you are looking for new medicine for vexing problems, that's the place to start. Now, our earlier guest, Allie Halperin, joined us to help us build some better photography, digital photography, and brought up the wonderful topic of tar. And, of course, here we are in the Tar Heel State, in the city known for its Tar Heels. And so, to wrap up the show this week, I've invited two very, very distinguished guests. They are the Tar Heel Creamery. Fellows, this is Michael Fink and Tony Schwartz. Welcome back to Courage Cocktail.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now listen, listeners, back in September, Michael and Tony joined us. It was the end of the ice cream season, or it was approaching the end, perhaps, but you are now back in full force. Talk to me, tell our listeners about what's happened since September, and most importantly, where can we find your ice cream?
Well, since we last saw you, madness. We took a little time off, and then we came back for looking for a new season, and things have been gangbusters ever since.
Well, tell me about our season. When is the season of ice cream for you guys?
In North Carolina, it tends to be a longer season.
Okay.
We start April was when we crank back our production side, and it'll probably go through the end of October.
Okay.
But the core months are right now, June through August, as school is out, people are out and about, nights are warm, looking for a nice, rich, indulgent treat. Tar Heel Creamery hopefully will be found in delivering that to them.
All righty. Now, listen, I want to ask a little bit more about how the truck is working out for you guys. When you were here in September, we got the story. Listeners, in case you missed that episode, we talked about how do you decide to use a food truck in North Carolina, in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and how's business going in that food truck? How are you doing?
Well, we passed it. We've gotten through the learning curve of handling the large trailer truck combo situation. I think once your place of business almost ends your life a couple times, you get the hang of it.
A few short turns, perhaps. I don't like the sound of this.
A little scary starting out.
But now what's going on is your ice cream is more available in other places. Where are you selling your ice creams beyond North, I should say beyond Chet Carrboro?
We choose select stores where our products are carried.
You're in supermarkets?
Not, when I say stores, I should backtrack, ice cream shops.
Okay.
Because we wholesale 2.5 gallon tubs to food service and ice cream shops. So our best customer actually developed out of our Piedmont Food and Agriculture Center where we produce in Hillsboro through Luna Pops, connected us with some folks down in Bald Head Island. So if any of you listeners actually vacation and holiday during the summer months down in Bald Head Island, we are the exclusive ice cream on the island at Sandpiper Ice Cream and Coffee. They carry upwards of 25 of our flavors, 16 in any given day. And they've been very, very proud to represent the Tar Heel Creamery brand. We're very excited to get in business with them. Locally, with more localized here in Pittsburgh, there's Al's Diner, opened up a ice cream slash lunch establishment. They carry exclusively Tar Heel Creamery. And there's another operation that's got multiple stores here in Chapel Hill, Market Street Coffee, and they carry a handful of our flavors.
Well, Michael, I appreciate all those lists of where we can find your ice cream. Have you developed any new flavors since we've been together?
I'll hand off to our flavor doctor, Tony.
Dr. Tony, come on.
I'm glad you asked. We have, actually. We have one new current flavor that we're very proud of. It seems to be doing quite well, and that would be Nutella, which is pretty much a mirror, a little bit more of a subtle than the straight-up Nutella, but we're working with the we're on the Nutella craze, and I think it's all is going well, as the population is pretty much aligned with that thought of that flavor.
Now, listeners, I'm a mommy, so Nutella is one of those. It's a hazelnut product, right? They crush. It's like peanut butter, but instead of using peanuts, we use hazelnuts. And so you're mixing this into your ice cream.
This is correct.
Any other new flavors out there?
We got a bunch of new flavors. We got a ginger. We have a ginger that's got a bunch of ginger fruit in there also, which is a quite a little tangy little treat.
I'm amazed that you never stop surprising me, because you are so, you're a premium ice cream, you're a premium brand, but you are always with your product. This is not a hands-off operation. I have seen these gentlemen. They serve their ice cream. They have their own truck. They produce their ice cream. And it's true. It's made in Hillsboro still. I think you're still out there?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so you're really, you are there. So when customers say to you, hey, have you ever considered making that red velvet cake into ice cream? You're the guys there to make that happen.
Absolutely. We have the capability of making a myriad of different flavors.
Uh-huh.
We do take customer feedback, and we try, if you know, to modify, make everything better. Nutella, Tony and I have gone towards that direction, and that was one of our genesis. There's also another flavor that Tony and I might be one of the most only ice cream makers, called Buttermint.
Buttermint?
Ice cream. Unbelievable. And it's been only in rotation in Hillsboro at the Hog Festival, and we sold out of our first batch of tubs on that, and that's coming back this week. We're going to be back in the factory.
Everyone loves the chewy mints.
Okay, what's inside?
It's a play on the soft mint craze here in the South. It's very popular. Not necessarily as popular in the North, but down here in the South, soft mints are everywhere. The availability is broad and wide. And we happen to be soft mint fans. Tony's discovered it. I've discovered it. And we're huge fans. And we're like, why aren't we using this in our ice cream? Because our mint ice cream is world famous.
Okay.
Why don't we incorporate two of our favorite things, our mint ice cream, take the chips out of it, and use the soft mints? Hallelujah. It is a home run.
And all right. So this is going to be available this weekend coming up? Or is it available now?
It is, actually.
It is available.
It's back on the production schedule for this week.
Now, this is one of the things our listeners may be truly fascinated in. We have always set it to be our objective to introduce local genius, talk about what it is they do, what inspires them, because even though you may not be having direct access to these guys' ice creams, I want you to start thinking about what you should expect from your ice creams. This premium company, or these two gentlemen who put their heart and soul into this product, is all about local. It's all about local. Where you're getting your creams and from the same farms, or where? How's that working for you?
It's good. We have a little bit of a problem trying to source all of our dairy locally. So some of it's a little bit regional, just because of availability, relationship establishment with some of the farms. Hasn't gone as well as we've liked, and then it's just try to compete with the normal sort of flow of the dairy is tough. But for the most part, yep, it's all coming from somewhere close by.
Somewhere close by.
And on that note, Michael. Leanne, one of the flavors that we've introduced in the past month, as berry season started to explode here in the Piedmont, is North Carolina berry. It covers a lot of the state, being a Tar Heel ice cream and the ultra premium Tar Heel ice cream maker. We've incorporated raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, and strawberries.
You're killing me. You're killing me here.
It is so popular. We can't keep that one in stock.
What color is it?
It's almost
pinkish purple.
Oh, it must
It's a light purple.
It must be beautiful.
It's beautiful. It scoops magnificently, and the feedback's been phenomenal. Some of our biggest success from the food truck side of the business has been at a couple of these rodeos. There's a gentleman that organizes one in downtown Raleigh that we're involved with. There's two more in August.
And when
11th
you say
is the next one.
When you say rodeo, we're not talking about rodeo. We're talking about food truck rodeo.
Food truck rodeo, correct. And there's also one in Durham we did this Sunday, also a food truck rodeo. And both North Carolina berries were introduced to Durham and Raleigh respectively at those rodeos, respective Sundays. Outstanding response, sold out by within 2 hours.
How do you guys recover after a rodeo? How do you, like, I know you bring your stuff with you, but how do you recover from an event like that? That's just, I imagine, thousands of people really interested in food trucks. I'm sure they're all over the country. I don't think, is this just a Tar Heel phenomenon?
No, they're available across the nation.
All right. So how do you respond to that? What do you learn from that event, those kinds of events?
Get a lot of exercise and a lot of sleep.
By the way, listeners, you can't see this, but both guys came in and said, Leanne, we're exhausted. We've been in full production swing. So I we're very blessed that you even took the afternoon just to give us a corner of your time to talk about what's going on. There's something else going on. I want to know about competition and contests happening. Michael, tell us what we need to do to help you.
Leanne, thanks for bringing that up. We just were notified yesterday that Chapelboro, which is organized several food truck rodeos, the only two food truck rodeos here in Chapel Hill, is having a frozen dessert contest, best of Chapel Hill. Tar Heel Creamery, being a Chapel Hill, Hillsborough, Orange County-based company, is part of that contest. So what I hope our listeners out there can do is go to chapelboro.com and vote for your favorite frozen dessert. If you've had Tar Heel Creamery, please, please vote with your heart.
It's called the short list.
The short list. All right. So we have to go out to chapelboro.com. Is
correct.
That right?
That is correct.
CHAPELBORO.com and find you under the frozen confections.
It's a frozen dessert contest.
Okay.
So I'd probably search the website. There might be a banner.
It's called the shortlist.
Called the
shortlist. And
we're going up against some heavyweight corporate players out there like TCBY and Ben & Jerry's. We're not scared.
That's why you're here on Courage Cocktail.
We got courage.
You got
and we
courage.
Love cocktails.
So listeners, I hope even though you may not even be in this region, poke around. Chapelboro.com is a wonderful, it's an overture to try to bring communities between Chapel Hill and Carrboro together. And this is one of those many playful events that may just do that. When I was a little girl, this might crack you up, but we used to say that our communities in New England were communities connected by waterways. We were in the Neponset River. We had the Charles River. Our connectivity wasn't based on highways or even major transportation. It was based on waterways. I want the triangle to be connected by ice cream, and I want the Tar Heel guys to be the lead pathway for that. Am I crazy?
Nope. Working on it now.
All righty. So let's shout out the website again. Michael Fink, tell me about your website and tell me about the contest.
Okay. Our website is tarheelcreamery.com.
Okay.
Pretty straightforward, as you'd imagine.
Yes.
It'll give you a little insight on who we are. We don't necessarily manage it on a day-to-day basis, but what we do operationally manage is our social media is Twitter and Facebook. And you can find us under Tar Heel Creamery at both Facebook and Twitter. That gives you real-time looks at when we're going to be out. We usually try to give notice upwards of 24 hours for events, certainly a little bit broader than that. This Friday we'll be at a drive-in movie theater it's called Raleigh Drive-In. It's north of Raleigh. It's the only remaining drive-in in the Triangle. If you consider it the Triangle, it's actually in Henderson off 85. Wow. They're putting on a free production. We'll be there Friday night serving up world-famous Tar Heel Creamery ice cream.
And Tony, do you have anything to add to this?
He just covered it pretty good.
All right. So now this is what my hope is, that everyone, listeners, if you're local, you will always find their food truck. What is that address where we find your food truck? Do you have a specific place?
We like to post up at our home spot. It's 206 East Main Street in Carrboro. For the time being, through July, we should be there until the wrecking ball swings here. Which is not a bad thing. And that's where we usually are.
That's right. And I want to ask, you're going to be here every single day? Are you going to be here on weekends?
Sporadically, most likely weekends.
And weekends means Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
One of those 3 days, potentially.
Check Facebook.
it's hard because we do have a very active calendar, and it's growing daily.
Yes.
So we try to get as much exposure of this product as possible. Carrboro's been a great venue. It's been a great launching point, but usually we're here 1 to 2 times a week. This Saturday, most likely, we'll be here as well.
The best way to find you and listeners, go to your social media. Go to Facebook. Go out to Twitter. And what's your handle on Twitter, by the way?
Tar Heel Creamery.
Tar Heel Creamery. Okay. Find you. You're going to give 24 hours notice. It's worth making the trip. If you live in the outer parts of the Triangle and happen to be streaming this radio show, all I can say, it's worth the trip. I know it. I've been around. I love ice cream, and I'm thrilled that you guys were able to join us. So we're going to go voting. When does the voting end? When's our deadline here?
I believe the contest ends June 25th.
June 25th.
Oh. So short window. Chapelboro.com.
Chapelboro.com, right? And don't waste your time. Get out there. Get these guys in on the short list. It's a privilege that you're here. Thank you for being such strong Tar Heels.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure. Go make some ice cream because I have my stomach's growling already. I just have to put the mic closer. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thanks.
Back to Courage Cocktail. Well, today we had three major ingredients. Did you notice? Two of which were essential, called Tar Heel. I'm grateful that you joined me this afternoon. I look forward to working with you and presenting you some new shows this summertime. Our announcer, Bill, is our soundboard engineer. I want to shout out and thank him for doing such a great job. I also want to remind everyone, our WCOM radio station is truly an all-volunteer effort. None of us get paid. All of us work so hard to present the best Carbora has to offer. This is an amazing little radio station. I hope all of you will consider any way you can supporting us. Come on out to www.wcomfm.org. And if you can, consider making a small donation or a large one. We need all of your help, and I appreciate you and our listeners. I look forward to being with you next week. You bring the lunch, and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. Thanks for joining me.